McCowan.
I believe, as I always have, that whether it's in society or in sport, intent is impossible to determine in most situations.
Sportsnet Radio.
The Fan 590.
Kind of a rainy, overcast, yucky day here in southern Ontario, and a lot of people probably feeling a little mopey and under the weather. So we need some good news today. So tell us about how you got sued.
I've been sued.
Everybody needs a little lift here today. So anything that's bad news for you would be good news for everybody else.
Well, you and I have been sued together. Are we allowed to talk about that?
I think so, because it's over.
Can we? Is it over?
I think so.
It's been going on for like a decade.
10 years. 10 years.
Did we win or lose? Any ideas?
Tie.
Hey, if you can tie a lawsuit, just like that's okay.
Just like the NHL.
Yeah, that's right. We still play for ties. No, you were talking about Twitter with Richard, correct?
Yeah.
And about social.
Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated.
Right. And Twitter and social media, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah, I was close to being the first, I think, person sued over Twitter. It was another, I'm not going to get into names.
No, it's not necessary.
But it was another member of the Canadian media who actually sent me, what's the initial thing? The threat.
I don't know.
If you don't do this, then we're going to do this.
So did you do anything?
No.
You haven't heard anything more?
No.
Well, you might still get sued.
Well, the ridiculousness of it, of course, is let's say that I did say something I shouldn't say. And Lord knows, I say many things I shouldn't say. And there was a need for an apology. You have to apologize in the same...
Medium.
Well, how ridiculous would an apology over Twitter look?
I'm sorry.
Well, you could break it down into like 9 different tweets. So anyways, as far as I know, it's sort of gone away. And it's ridiculous that anybody in the media would ever threaten to sue another person in the media unless what was going on was so onerous. I mean, let's face it. We spend our entire lives insulting each other.
No, wait a second. So I don't want you to tell me what you said.
I can't. I'd have to remember. I think I have a general idea.
Well, you can tell me if you want, but I don't want to get you in trouble. Right. So let me ask you, if you said it...
This is new. You don't want to get me in trouble.
If you said it... Well, no, because you can get yourself in plenty of trouble all by yourself.
Yeah.
If you said it on this program...
Yes.
Do you think it would have been litigious?
No.
No. So you think it was nothing under any circumstance?
It was because of the silliness of the person involved.
Okay.
So, listen, it's no great claim to fame to almost be sued over Twitter. I think it just says more about the other person... than anything about me. But you know what? If you're going to be in our business, you better have a thick skin, and we throw it out there, and we better be able to take it, or at least be able to get into a back and forth with somebody. So I can't, unless someone, like I said, if someone said something, you know, if someone said about you on radio or whatever that you'd held up a 7-Eleven and deserved to go to jail for it. Have you held up a 7-Eleven? Well, let's assume for the sake of this discussion that you have not.
It was an AM/PM mini market.
That you might then...
It wasn't a 7-Eleven.
I think you might then seek...
And I didn't actually hold them up.
No, you just said, I don't have any money. Can I just have it? So then you might you could, perhaps you might take action. Have you ever sued anyone?
No. I've been sued.
Yeah. What would someone have to say about Bob McCown for Bob McCown to sue them?
I don't know. I mean, I can't say that. I mean, look, at a lot of things make me angry, but I'm not. Right. I'm not litigious because, like you, I believe that if you are going to throw stones,
yeah, as we do,
you're going to have to get. You're going to catch some too.
Yeah,
and you're not going to like it.
Yeah,
and sometimes I probably go over the edge. In the opinion of some.
Yeah.
And I believe that others in responding to me have said things that are over the edge.
Yeah.
And my response is, I don't like it, but I'm not going to do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, my response usually is to fire back, and I get angry. And that's probably the way to do it is to just ignore it.
Yeah, and that's what I try and
do. You're pretty good at that.
I'm pretty good at ignoring.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get into a battle if I think there is some intellect, some tangible dialogue, some place we could go with it. If it can enhance the discussion,
right.
If it's enjoyable
if
to
it's
me.
If it's just insulting back and forth.
If it's just insulting, yeah.
See, I got into it the other day with the clown who used to work here.
Which clown?
You know, the guy who walked around and calling himself the dude. I am the dude.
Oh, I heard about that, yeah.
And I mean, it was so ridiculous what the guy said to me. I don't even know this guy. I just know he's not here and he's couldn't get elected, so... So he's firing this thing at me, and I just sort of fired back. And then, as usual, I get mad. But this time, after two, I just said, stop.
Enough.
I'm not doing this with a person of this level. So I didn't. So that's close to what I should be doing. What I should have done is just completely ignored it.
Yeah, and I guess what you have to do is you have to have a general opinion that people who say things, write things, that anger you to that level are people who've never been out of their mother's basement.
Right.
And well, are not worth fighting with.
But that's what caught me by surprise in this one. And what this one was over.
Well,
do you remember,
this was a sort of a prominent.
Well, this was. Well, no, I said who it was.
Yeah. He was prominent.
The dude.
He was prominent.
The dude. When in the wake of the Wade Belak death.
Oh, that's what it was about. Right? I remember
and
that.
PJ
now.
Stock
yeah.
came out and said this was not suicide. This was strangulation and blah, blah, blah. I subsequently wrote a column and said, if you're going to go out and say something, you better explain yourself. Because you can't when the entire world is saying it's suicide and you come out and say, oh, no, it isn't. And I know what's going on. That's not good enough. You got to explain yourself. Mm-hmm. PJ Stock has chosen not to do that. And that's fine. I mean, PJ's a good guy. So then Dave Festchuk in our paper wrote a story with the parents the other day saying they don't believe it was suicide, but not really shining any more light on it. And in this piece, it also said PJ Stock said X, but is not elaborated. So the dude decided to take me to task saying I should now apologize to PJ Stock, for which I said, for what? He still hasn't elaborated. He's chosen not to. That's his business.
Yeah.
But apologize to him for what? Anyways, and then it got stupid after that and childish.
I
think you'll agree with this. Nobody gets childish faster than I do. Maybe Gord Stellick.
Oh, no, you'd be right up there.
1-1A.
And see, the interesting thing is we've talked very little about the Belak thing. And since you brought it out, let me say this much. The morning that it became public knowledge, I guess late morning, became public knowledge that this had happened. Or was it in the afternoon? Maybe it was the following morning. Could have been the following morning. But like right away, I was in contact with somebody who works in a significant newsroom in this city. Who
said.
Who had reporters on site at the condo or whatever it was where Belak was staying.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was a police beat person. Who knew the cops and were talking to people. And this was like nobody knew anything at this point. And this person said to me on the tele, and it was just an accident, you know, coincidence. We were talking, and he said to me, This was not a suicide. This was an accidental death.
Right. And anytime I've talked about it, I've just said alleged or apparent or alleged or whatever suicide. Yeah. But I don't know what happened.
No, and I don't know more than that.
No.
And so then
I hear all the same rumors as everybody else, but I'm not going to deal in rumors that I don't know anything.
No,
about.
And that's just
and that's
it.
The problem. The only problem I have with PJ, and I would say this to him, and I said, if you're going to, you better be prepared to speak, explain yourself.
How do you give a little bit and not?
Yeah,
you know.
So,
and I don't know what he knows. I'm not saying that PJ doesn't know more than what I know, but what I knew was secondhand, and I didn't have a whole lot of details. But the only thing was, there were you would attest to this. It was very, I found it quite disturbing that so many people for so long referred to this as a suicide and tried to link this to concussions and tried to link it to his pugilistic activities mm-hmm. while being a hockey player. Tried to link this to something that it appeared to me had nothing to do with it.
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. I mean, first of all, his parents did come out and say that he was suffering from depression. And this was a summer in where there were three deaths of players who all, as their primary role, were fighters.
I get all that.
I think that that's more than a coincidence. And I think you begin to wonder, what is fighting in hockey doing to these guys?
Well, okay, but I don't think this, based on what I have been led to believe, but I don't know. What I was told by this reputable member of this news organization who claimed to know exactly what happened. This was an accidental death.
You're doing what PJ Stock did, and that
no,
is.
No, but I'm at least being upfront and saying I don't know anymore. But if in fact it should be an accidental death,
well, you don't.
Who knows?
I mean, look, a young man in the prime of his life lost his life, so at this point, it almost doesn't matter.
Right? I don't disagree with that,
and certainly this was. I don't know what to say about.
But don't you think that the media? Here's what I wanted to say.
I think the media jumped to the conclusion that
this was a suicide.
I think people. Well,
they jumped to the conclusion that this was a suicide.
That I don't know because I wasn't reporting on the original story. But I thought you were going to say, didn't people jump to make it all about fight? I think people were basically extremely respectful of Wade Belak and his tragic death, however it happened. And I think people were very careful to talk about it in terms of fighting and hockey and concussions and all that sort of stuff. But Bob, to sit there and say, no, none of that stuff matters, that's ignorant. I mean, clearly there's something going on because it's not just Wade Belak and Rick Rippon and Derek Boogaard, because we also know what happened to Bob Probert and we also know what happened to John Cordick.
Well, I know there's something going on. I'm just not sure that Belak should be included in that.
Well, I don't know.
And I suppose I don't either, but I don't believe he should be included.
We know one thing for sure.
What?
One thing for sure. Mm-hmm. From his parents, that he was suffering from depression. That's the only thing we know.
And how can I sit here and say that's not true?
You know, right. That's the only thing. And everything else, as far as we know, I mean, I think that if people want to know the truth or people want there to be a different truth, then they should come out and say it. I think the concern is people are that the truth might be more embarrassing or more negative for Wade Belak than the allegation that he committed suicide.
Well, okay. So now, do you believe there's any obligation on the part of the media to find out what the cause of death
was?
That's
an interesting question. I would say Wade Belak was a public figure, and therefore, yes. Yes.
So therefore, if we assume that, then here we are a couple of weeks after this tragic incident,
mm-hmm.
and the police have not released a cause of death?
No, they've said they're not going to.
And based on what?
I don't know.
Is that right?
I don't know what the policies are of the police force in regards to deaths that are not, you know, attributable to foul play.
It's
or
not suspicious.
Like that.
It's not a suspicious matter.
Yeah,
it doesn't really involve any criminal activity.
Right.
It may be embarrassing, but it may not be.
Right. Although, well, yeah, I mean, suicide is against the law.
Well, but this was not. If we take it literally, if there was no criminal activity here,
yeah.
and the police are not going to release a cause of death,
right.
therefore it could not have been suicide.
No, because they wouldn't say if it was suicide, I don't think.
Well,
I don't think in the case of Rick Rippon, they have not come out and said he took his own life. The police have not said that.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know. I think they had.
I don't think so. I think they basically just said He was found, and this was not a suspicious death or something like that. I mean, the police try, I think, in the matter such as this, to be as sensitive as they can to the families involved.
As well they should be.
And I totally understand that. And that's why this is a tricky one, because, you know, there's a couple of possibilities here as to what happened to Wade Belak. And I guess the family has to try, because he's, I mean, they can say they'd like it to be private, and that's fine. But he's a public figure. So
that's a hard one.
Well, I mean, how do they want him remembered, I guess, is the question. That's what they're going to have to decide. It's not my decision to make, and it's an awfully hard decision.
Yeah, the only dilemma is that there are sufficient people out there.
Who are you waving at? Who's walking by?
He's going to, there's a guy, he's engaged to my niece.
Well, bring him in here. Let's talk to him about it.
No, he's busy. He's going somewhere.
It's people walk
by. I can
by.
Wave to, well, that's the whole idea, isn't it? That people walk by and we wave to them. Every once in a while.
No, the whole idea is I got my back to them.
Thing one or thing two comes in.
But they just, and they walk in.
Barge in, to get airtime. Anyways, it is a fascinating story, Bob. I agree with you. You know.
And this is the first time we've talked about it, and I'm not comfortable talking about it, but.
No, well, but
I think the tough stories aren't easy
to talk about.
No, they aren't.
I mean, but like, I mean, the dude sort of was saying to me, you know more than you say. I don't know anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and I only know what I've now said, and I don't even know what I know.
Yeah.
I know secondhand somebody, a guy said to a guy who said to me, this is what happened. Do I know that to be true? I do not. Do I believe it's true? Based on everything I've heard and other sources, ever increasingly, yes, it sounds.
Well,
it sounds
I mean, like I will say this. I saw Wade. I knew Wade a little bit. I saw him in Nashville during the playoffs.
Yeah.
We chatted briefly. Yeah, Wade was, as people portray him to be, an upbeat, happy guy who usually had a smile on his face. It was a surprise to me that his parents said that he, or his mother, I think it was, said he suffered from depression. But a lot of people do.
Yeah.
A lot of people do, and it's an awful, crippling problem. Now, what the degree of his problem was, I don't know. But it's just, any way it happened, Bob, I think you and I would both agree it's a sad, sad story.
When we come back, have we decided? Is it Ashby next? Okay, Alan Ashby will join us next, and then we hope Kevin Cheveldea off of the Winnipeg Jets will join us after that.
And we got to talk to him about realignment, too, the Jets. Where do they want to be? Where should they be? Should they be in an all-Canadian division? You tell me.
Oh, no, they can't do that.
Why?
You could, but I mean,
it's on the table. It's one of the things out there.
Wow. It's just geographically, that's a lot of airplane miles.
If you're the Dallas Stars, no matter where you go, it's a lot of airplane miles because everybody, you're completely isolated where you are.
Well, I mean, there is an answer to that too.
And that is?
Dallas should move.
Fold them. Fold the Dallas Stars.
No, move Dallas. Move the city. Put it on a flatbed and.
Here we go.
Call Bob Irsay. He knows how to do that.
By the way, we talked Davis Cup yesterday. Now we're not going to talk any more Davis Cup. We know that's who they're going to play next.
No, we don't want to.
Oh, and I thought you would want to say that who they're going to play next. One of your favorite words.
I don't know what I don't know who they're playing.
France.
Are they really?
They're playing France.
I don't think I can get it out. I'll have to leave it. So who do the French have?
Oh, they're way better than us.
Who, like what?
They got Joe Wilfred Tsonga. They have Gilles Simon.
Oh, that's right.
They have Gael Monfils. They have Richard Gasquet. He's the guy who got caught using cocaine and then said he got it from kissing a girl in a nightclub. And they bought it. They bought it.
Get out.
They did. So they got a lot
think
of talent.
That would work for us?
No. No, I don't, Bob.
Alan Ashby, when we come back and Primetime continues.
France.
It's Primetime on the Fan and Sportsnet.
Sportsnet Radio. The Fan 590.
Six past the hour, McCown and Cox in the radio studio. Oh, by the way, next Wednesday, a week today, Brian Burke will join us in studio for a long chat.
I didn't know that.
You're going to be here now?
No, it's Brent's week.
Okay. Just happened that way, I'm sure.
It's okay. I talk to Mr. Burke all the time.
I haven't talked to him for a long time.
I'm sure you'll have very interesting. He's in New York today. Governors were yesterday. And then all the teams stay around and do your little presentation for Gary and Bill and those guys and say,
oh, great.
Here's what we got. My dog, so they were doing that.
The dog and pony show.
That's right. Oof. And some chatter that he might have some interest in Kyle Turris.
Well, can we talk about that later?
We don't have to talk about it at all.
Okay. Then
I thought you might be interested. What Leaf fans might be interested, but you might not be interested in that.
Hell with them.
All right.
Here's the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. Here's Alan Ashby. Hi, Ashby. How are you?
I'm doing good. What are the Leaf fans interested in right
cares?
Now?
Who cares what they're interested in?
Not a hockey fan there,
they're
Mr.
all a
Ashby?
Bunch of dopes.
Don't know a whole lot, but thanks for asking.
So wait a sec. Is this the last home game tonight?
No, tomorrow night. Tomorrow night. Last one, Bob.
Okay. Trying to keep track here.
Yeah, me too.
Do you have a calendar that you check off, Ashby? Like, I can't get out of here fast enough. Like, this thing can't be over quick enough for me.
Well, you know what, Bob? This is my fifth year here with the ball club. We have not exactly been in the pennant race any one of the 5 years. And, you know, I heard you talking earlier about fandom kind of dropping off this time of the year. And it does. And I have my little mental checklist that I have going on. And I know how many games remain.
In other words, the answer is yes, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't know what that
was the
answer
longest
was.
Answer that equals yes ever.
I'm trying to get the hell out of here. Because I would think, Alan, at a certain point, the auditioning of young players and all, that's not the same as trying to win ball games, is it?
You know what? They're trying to win ball games. There's no question about that. But they're doing it with younger players for the good part. Obviously, you've got the Jose Bautista scenario where at least when he's on his game, I think he's the best player in baseball. But, yeah, you've got some young guys in here. And with Brett Laurie and Eric Thames, they've been tremendous. Henderson Alvarez on the mound as well. I think he looks spectacular as you look toward next year and even what we've seen this year. And this team's been winning. They just recently won 5 out of 7 from the Red Sox and took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees as they came in. So they've been making life tough on these teams that have been trying to get into the postseason. I know that.
All right, so here, let's get blunt.
I thought I just was.
No, that was Marvin Milquetoast stuff. So we're at spring training next year. The Blue Jays are going to be a contender, a team that will strive to play meaningful games in September, something unseen in these parts since 1993, meaningful baseball in the month of September. What are the chances that A, Cecil, B, Drabek, both of whom we saw yesterday, will be a part of that rotation?
It's a hard one to answer. I'm not sure that anybody would have a really legitimate response for you there, Bob. I know that the stuff of Kyle Drabek is good enough to qualify him as a guy who I think is going to be a good pitcher. I thought he was going to be a quality pitcher this year. Obviously, I was way off base in that regard. But Brett Cecil, the stuff has dropped off. I'm concerned at this point, and I still believe that even with the stuff I've been watching him deliver to the plate, that he can be successful, but not if his fastball at 87 to 89 miles an hour is going to be up in and out of the strike zone consistently. He's got a great changeup. He's got a curveball that's been really good at times. But that fastball has to be better in terms of location, and to me that's the number one issue for Brett Cecil. But, yeah, it's a couple of names that I think there are huge question marks about.
Now, we were talking about Cecil and his fastball in spring training, but we were talking about velocity then, not location as much. Did he get the velocity back to a satisfactory level in your mind?
There have been a couple of games where he has, but not consistently. But I don't think he was a consistently real hard thrower last year. I think he threw a little harder than I've seen this year. But I thought the command of the fastball was definitely better than what I've watched this year. And, you know, I listened to all the comments about guys, but I will say the one comment that has stood out for me that to be true on Brett Cecil, and I know it comes out of my mouth all the time, is you can't be successful up in the zone with that fastball on a consistent basis. And that's what I see time after time, and last night was no exception.
All right, bluntly, how much is this pitching staff being hurt by a rookie catcher?
I don't think it's been hurt, quite honestly. There was a period of time, in fact, up until about a month ago, Bob, where in my most honest moments, I would say, you know, I don't know if J.P. Arencibia is the catcher of the future of a ball club that's trying to get into the postseason play. And mm-hmm. I'm talking defensively only.
Yeah.
On the defensive side, in the last few weeks, I've watched him get better and better. His game calling, I think, has been the strength of his catching side all year long. So in terms of applying on the mental side, I think he's been there 100% and then some, if that's possible. And I actually debate myself saying something like that. But on top of that, his throwing game has just gotten so much better here in the last few weeks. His blocking game has not been consistently perfect, but it's been a whole lot better than I have watched over the lengthy season. And so I'm seeing some things that have made me pause and step back and say, you know what? This guy can hit the long ball. He's likely to become a better hitter in terms of batting average over the upcoming years, hopefully. And he's already a run producer. And now the defensive side of the game is starting to look awfully good. So, you know, maybe the Blue Jays really have something in this young backstop.
So just to follow up on what we were talking about, Drabek and Cecil, let's go back to Drabek. You're satisfied that the stuff is there?
Well, absolutely. At least the radar gun says it is. You're talking about a guy that has great action on his fastball between 93 and 96, 97 miles an hour. That's exceptional. When you look around Major League Baseball, you can name any great pitcher you want to name, shy of maybe Justin Verlander, who can summon up 100-plus miles an hour, it seems, at just the moment when he says, okay, I need a little bit more right now. But look around at anybody else. You see anybody that's in that kind of a range? There aren't many. And the ones that are normally are the really good pitchers. Obviously, the command for Kyle Drabek has been off the charts bad at times this year, and so there's a lot to be worked on right there. But I think stuff-wise, he's there. I think Henderson Alvarez, stuff-wise, is there. So to me, in terms of raw talent, they've got some real good ones.
What's Moro now? We've seen, we saw three or four really horrific starts from him. And then he comes back in his last one with a dazzling effort, seeming to me to throw the same kinds of pitches he was throwing when he was getting hit all over the yard. I didn't see anything different except the results. So what is Brandon Morrow?
You know, that last start that you referred to with Brandon Morrow, the one thing that I would say was different. Velocity was pretty much the same as we've been watching all season long. But it was against the Yankees, if I'm recalling correctly. He got ahead strike one and stayed ahead in the count. Took
Fair
the
enough,
Yankees
yeah.
out of their little game of we're going to take like the Red Sox. Made them swing the bats. And when they did swing the bats, they weren't able to make contact all that well, as we see when Brandon Morrow does throw strikes. So to me, that's really the big thing there, too. It's all about command. You look back to last year, the first 10 starts or so were pretty shaky, though the stuff was good, exceptional maybe at times. And then he settled in and he started throwing strikes, which he hasn't been able to do for a lengthy period this year. When he did last year, he was tremendous. I think we all were drooling over the prospects, but I think it always really speaks to one thing that I say. I take nothing for granted. People who say, well, it's only going to get better from here, I just have to kind of chuckle at, because it only gets better when it gets better, and that comes through a lot of hard work and sometimes a lot of good fortune on your side.
Now, the Yankees clinched just this afternoon, but we're still waiting on the Red Sox. They obviously get help by Tampa losing. Their rotation is, I mean, they're in a position now where they're looking at having to start Josh Beckett maybe three times in 8 days just to get into the postseason and then not be able to. I mean, what do you do if you're Terry Francona with your rotation in the last few days? Do you have to just try to get into the playoffs and worry about it after that?
Kind of proves the point about how tough it is to come up with pitching when you're looking at the Red Sox and the Yankees, both clubs like any other teams in the major leagues right now, maybe shy of Tampa Bay, saying we need more pitching. And so it really is true, and that's why you want to load up with all the good arms that you can. But Boston has been ridiculous bad in terms of their starting pitching. When John Lester is scuffling, something is really wrong in Boston. Clay Buchholz is a guy they need back. And Josh Beckett, I don't know, when's the last time he's had 30 starts in a season? So can you count on him to make three starts in a series in the postseason? I just don't know. He's really good when he's healthy and on. But they need more than one or two guys in that rotation.
Ashby, week and a half. Count the days.
8 games counting tonight, Bob, but I'm not counting. I have to use my chart here.
And then do we hear his voice before spring training again?
Or no,
do you
probably
just,
not.
Just go silent now
no,
for
just
months.
On an airplane, gone.
My phone doesn't ring during the off season.
Well, if your phone doesn't ring, it's me.
Thank you.
Alan Ashby, the voice of the Blue Jays, back in a bit. It's primetime on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Former owner of the LA Kings, Bruce McNall, joins Brady and Lang tomorrow morning
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
So just so we're clear, the governor's meeting yesterday?
In New York.
Yeah. What was today?
Oh, there were individual teams meeting with the league.
Okay.
But yesterday was the governor's, and they had about, they were talking about the Nets and all that sort of stuff we were talking about, because we were talking to Lou Lamoriello about this yesterday, but they also had about an hour discussion, and it sounds as though it was sort of a freewheeling discussion about realignment. And of course, it's the Winnipeg Jets who are making everybody realign because they're back in the league, which is a great thing.
Here's the chairman and governor of the Jets. Here's Mark Chipman. Mr. Chipman, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Good. So how was that discussion about realignment? I gather it was lively, to say the least.
Well, you know, it was very respectful. There's several points of view. As you point out, we're the culprits in all of this.
Yep.
But really no consensus that I could ascertain. I think there's a fair number of people that are quite content with the status quo, that is to say, six divisions inside of two conferences. There's some advocating for four divisions.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously creates an unequal number of teams and divisions. And that begs further questions in terms of playoff format and all those kinds of things. But really, there was it was just an airing of views. No one pounding their fist on the table. It was quite the opposite. It was quite cordial and
civil,
and no consensus.
Well. And I'm led to believe that may change because the lobbying is going to.
You know that's going to
the
change.
The lobbying is going to begin. Let me just start with one point quickly, Mark. That there is no suggestion that, like the Winnipeg Blue Bombers playing in the East or the Canadian Football League, that the Winnipeg Jets are going to be forced to stay in the Eastern Conference. Is there?
No, there's not.
Now the logical one, or the one that people have thought, is Winnipeg goes to the West. And the Detroit Red Wings come to the East. But as you were saying, and I think it's true, that's just one scenario, correct?
Correct.
I mean, is there a Winnipeg Jets plan? Is there something that you think this is what we would like to see? And specifically, would you like to play, if it were available, in an all-Canadian division or conference?
Well, I think that'd be really cool. I don't think that's going to happen, so I haven't spent a lot of time dwelling on that. I think, you know, that means that I just can't imagine that that's going to happen. I think our preference would be to play in the Northwest, to play against Calgary, Edmonton, Van, Colorado, Minnesota, those types of teams. And that could quite possibly occur. But there's also a case to be made for playing sort of in your time zone.
So Central with Chicago and St. Louis,
Dallas.
You're just going straight up and down, playing St. Louis, Mini, Chicago, Dallas, Nashville. There's a case to be made for that as well. Because we're in the Central time zone, we're not really pressed one way or the other, and we're not going to take a hard line, nor do we think we're entitled to one way or the other. We'll be, you know, we think we need to play in the West, and everybody else does as well. So. We're right, really content to see how this unfolds.
What is the economic reality or impact, shall we say, of where you will play this year versus where you think you will play next year? I know that it's not going to be a hard number, but just in general terms, are we talking $1 million a year more in travel costs this year?
No, it'll be less than that. Bob, it'd be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars in additional or incremental travel costs this year, not millions.
So the real issue then is not economic, but rather convenience, inconvenience, time.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I don't want to suggest that we're going to be really hardly done by here. I mean, it's not optimal, but it's, you know, because we come from a central time zone, getting to the East isn't that problematic. It's only an hour, right, in terms of time on the players' bodies. And when you go out East, you usually stay out East for a while. So it's not like we're going, you know, legging back and forth and back and forth. Typically when we go out, if we go to Florida and do that swing through there, we're there for a while.
Now, when you look at the what you want the most, Mark, do you look primarily at who's coming into our building and how many tickets can we sell? Or are you looking at this more or primarily as a television issue? The Dallas Stars, for example, I think all of their road games, all of them, are in different time zones.
Right.
If you had to say one or the other that is a primary focus for the Winnipeg Jets, is it who's coming into the building, so who can we sell? Or is it television in a way that allows our fans to see our games when we're on the road?
I think it's more the latter, and I think there are some other criteria as well that we balance that would include distance to games and, you know, so wear and tear on players and the development of rivalries. I think who's coming into the building is of, I mean, because we've got a, you know, we've got the smallest building in the league, we're sold out for the next 5 years. We're not concerned about the marquee value of, you know, the Leafs or Detroit or Washington, Pittsburgh sort of thing, that other buildings in markets that aren't, don't have the sort of same season ticket base that the Western Canadian teams do. Love to see those teams, no doubt, but it's not essential in from a monetary perspective. And ultimately, you know, those teams are determined by the scheduling process, and you get what you get. So for us, it's really more, you know, you want to develop appropriate rivalries, both, you know, during the season and in playoffs, where I think rivalries are really developed. You want to minimize wear and tear on your team. And the TV issue is a real one that, you know, if you're constantly playing on the West Coast, as Dallas does, or Detroit, you know, there are three time zones removed.
Right.
Then their fans aren't seeing their games, and or certainly not, you know, the games are coming on at 10 o'clock at night, and they're not getting highlight packages. So that's a criteria for sure we look at. But again, because we're central, we're not really ever going to be, unless we started playing a ton of games on the West Coast, we should not be disadvantaged.
With Mark Chipman, the chairman and governor of the Winnipeg Jets, we have about 3 minutes here. So in the course of this first season back for the Winnipeg Jets, it would occur to me, I was just sitting here thinking, like, how many significant mark on your calendar, remember the rest of your life kind of days would there be? Well, there may be three, but there will be two for sure. One might be the first playoff game. One definitely will be the opening night home game.
Mm-hmm.
And then to a only slightly lesser extent, last night, the first game of any sort, even though it's not a meaningless or is a meaningless encounter in terms of the schedule, not meaningless when a franchise comes to, or in your case, returns to the city. So, in a word, how was last night?
Well, disappointing, because I missed it.
didn't get back.
By all accounts, it was fantastic. I mean, you know, people were going bananas and lined up early to get in the building, and it by all accounts had the, you know, had the feel of a late playoff game. I couldn't get back, unfortunately. I was able to get to Columbus at least and watch our split squad playing Columbus, but that was a little consolation.
Yeah.
It's been suggested to me, Mark, that if the NHL, the powers that be in the NHL, had misgivings about the Winnipeg Jets coming back in the league because of market size and arena size and all those things that I'm sure you've heard a zillion times, the response of the Winnipeg market to the Jets has been so overwhelming that almost even those who had misgivings have sort of abandoned them. Is that your sense now, too, at a league level?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and we had that sense some time ago. You know, we went through a series of presentations to the league over the past few years. And I think that the leadership of the league and the governance of the league understood that the market was real. I don't think any of us, myself included, expected the reaction that we got. And so, you know, I think it's kind of hammered the point home, and lots of very gracious and warm welcomes that we have received from our partners in the league.
To that end, there were three I believe, eventualities that at least I have discussed, and many others have too. One of them has now taken place. That is the return of the Jets to Winnipeg. In no particular order, a second team in Toronto and a team back in Quebec City. Any sense that what you've been able to accomplish in Winnipeg might expedite B and C?
I don't know. I mean, fair and logical question, but I don't know. I mean, I think the commissioner, you know, when he says they loathe to move teams, I really believe that's the case. They you know, you all experienced the what's gone on in Phoenix. I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to avoid the question. I just don't know if it necessarily follows. I would say this. There's no doubt in my mind, that Southern Ontario is ripe for a team. Probably, you know, maybe more so than Winnipeg. And Quebec, I wouldn't discount at all. I mean, I think you'd get the exact same reaction there that, you know, virtually the same size of market that we got.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, we've got to get out of here. We'll have plenty of time to chat about these eventualities and where the Winnipeg Jets wind up next season. But that's a full year away, and there's lots of hockey between now and then. Always good of you to take time for us, Mark. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure, guys.
The chairman and governor of the Winnipeg Jets, Mark Chipman.
Still pretty cool to say that, don't you think?
It is very cool. Christina Groves, Ken Hitchcock, and Damon Allen, all coming up when Primetime continues. You're listening on The Fan or watching on Sportsnet.